Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, a premium podcast for USCFootball.com subscribers only. It's a little bit different one this week. We are actually up in Beaverton, Oregon, right next to the Nike headquarters where the opening, it's kind of the mecca of high school football. As far as all-star games and stuff go, this is a really cool event. So Gerard Martinez and myself are up here. We've had a ton of questions, and there was so much going into this event, we didn't get a chance to do a recruiting podcast. So we wanted to do one now that we're up here. We got some time before the next workout. So we're in our hotel room. I'm with Gerard Martinez. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. What's up, Gerard?
Doing good. We got, a lot of downtime. The schedule changed on us. We're supposed to be out there at Nike World Headquarters at 1 p.m. and it got pushed back to 7 p.m. So we're going to have a little night Nike showcase opening extravaganza, Vapor Speed, Untouchables, Mach Speed, Alpha Menace. Where do they come up with these names?
Savage Pro. I think they're names of shoes, aren't they? Aren't they names of shoes?
I don't know. We were at the Nike store yesterday, and I was looking for the Hyper Strong shoes, and I didn't see them. So I don't know. I was looking for a nice pair of Mach Speed. I didn't get any shoes. You got some shoes yesterday.
I bought some shoes. I don't know what they're called, though. They were, I don't remember. They're running shoes. They're running shoes with extra arch support. I
need that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. You actually went and talked to one of the people there.
Yes.
And actually got some advice on the shoes. Usually everybody that goes in there just like they're overwhelmed by all the selection and the prices that they just grab stuff. That's kind of how, like, see something you like, a color you like, and grab it and throw it in your bag. And so I didn't get any shoes. I'm a little bummed out by that.
But last year you bought like five pairs.
No, I bought three pairs.
Yeah.
So I did get you know, a nice hoodie, and I got a couple things. I got my sister some stuff. I know I talked to Blair Angulo today, and he had a list from his family of stuff to pick up. So I said, wow, good luck with that, man. Because usually you end up in the Nike store with your phone taking pictures of stuff
and sending
it back to people. Like, do you like this color? Is this good? So that's kind of what I was in yesterday because I just could not find shoes. I found a couple of shoes that I like, but A, either they weren't a good color or they just did not fit well, you know, and you got to be careful. Some of those Nike basketball shoes, the Jordans, they can be murder on your feet. So, I didn't find any shoes that I like, but I did get some other stuff. So,
People might not know what we're talking about. So because we're up here at the opening, it's at Nike headquarters. It's like this amazing event that if you've never been to the Nike campus, I mean, it's a campus. It's like a college.
Yeah, yeah.
It's enormous.
It has a lake in the middle
of it. But there's running tracks, all this kind of there trails and all this stuff there, but they have an employee store. So only if you're an employee can you shop at the store, and it's like everything 60% off or something like that. And they give the media and like counselors and things like that that come up to work the event a day pass, so we can go and go to the employee. So basically, you're like an employee of Nike for the day. You can go buy shoes and shirts and all kinds of stuff. And you're more of a shoe guy than me, but I did want a pair of running shoes.
Ryan came in very focused. He's like, I want an outfit.
I bought shoes, shorts. I bought some golf pants too, because Nike got rid of their golf stuff, so it was all kind of like stuff on clearance anyway too. So Nike's not, you know, with Tiger Woods not really being. But anyways, that's our shopping exploits up here in Beaverton. But we do have some free time. We had all these questions that you guys had sent in because, you know, the Matt Corral decommitment is a big deal. Where are they going with quarterback recruiting? What's up with the wide receiver stuff? All the recent offers that and commits that came last week. There's so much going on in the world of USC recruiting. So we got all these questions, but we were preparing. If you definitely go to the USCFootball.com and check out Gerard's opening preview, a lot of good information breaks down every team, the hyperspeed, all those teams, where the prospects are. So definitely check that stuff out.
And those teams are representative of the 7-on-7 teams that they'll have. They have six different teams that will play in the 7-on-7 tournament. And they also have lineman challenges, and the linemen are attached to those teams in some way. And I don't know how the point system all comes together.
Yeah.
But so that's what that is. So it's a little bit of marketing and what have you. But it's always interesting because, you know, Nike always has those kind of interesting names for things and what have you. And they pop up certainly with the recruiting aspect of things this weekend, when we're trying to label guys and figure out who's on the purple team, who's on the light lime green team. Oh, is that Alpha Pro this year? Okay, cool.
And there's usually two teams that have like almost the same coloring. You're like, what is that?
Which is odd because you figure, you know, Nike, they have all these kind of extravagant colors, but usually there's like a blue and then there's a little darker blue team or something. So yeah, we're always interested to see so we can decipher who the heck is who, so we can go out there and actually film that stuff for you guys and report on it.
Yeah, so it's a big event, you know. So the next few days we'll be up here taking pictures, video, doing interviews and all that stuff. But we wanted to get a recruiting podcast in, and luckily, since they changed the schedule, or unluckily, I mean, we're basically sitting here in the hotel room. Okay, what are we going to do up here in Beaverton, Oregon? Why don't we do an epic recruiting
epic
podcast?
Mega podcast.
So there's not going to be any, what do we call it?
Rapid fire.
We're not going to do any rapid fire. It's just going to be...
It could be rapid fire. Hey, man, if you know, it's a yes or no question.
Yeah, that's true. But not intended rapid fire for time purposes. Like this, I'm guessing like a 2-hour thing is what we're going to do here.
We'll see. So, you know, grab yourself a beverage. Get comfortable.
If you're going for a jog, you know, whatever you're doing, if you're listening in your car,
you're
going to
burn some extra calories
someplace further. You're not driving just down the street. Hopefully you're driving to like Vegas or something.
Well, it's LA, so if you're driving anywhere, you probably have some extra time because of 4th of July traffic.
Right. So I guess we can talk just about a little bit about the opening first, and then, you know, it's more of the preview. You can check that up on the site. But 4 commits here, Gerard. Couple linebackers, running back, and an offensive lineman. So we'll get footage of all those guys. But is there any one or two, three, whatever, particular guys that you really want to kind of check out here? Maybe East Coast guys that we don't get to see as much? Or what do you think?
Yes, I think the first interesting thing is Alpha Menace, that team, because you have Matt Corral with Jalen Hall and Amon-Ra St. Brown as receivers. You also have on that team Pala'ie Goteote and Raymond Scott and Elijah Griffin. So you're talking about a core group of very highly thought of prospects in USC's eyes, plus Matt Corral, who just recently decommitted. But there's been some chatter he wants back into the class. And certainly the way that thing all played out, and I'm sure we have some questions on that, so I'm not going to get too much into that. But that makes it interesting, that team sort of as a whole. You know, Jalen Hall, Amon St. Brown, those two guys both play with each other for Premium Sports, the 7-on-7 team during the spring. They don't play with Matt Corral. They actually play with JT Daniels. So it'll be interesting to see how Corral plays with, you know, he's got his teammate there now, Jalen Hall, but also Amon St. Brown. So we're going to see kind of that dynamic. That's an interesting team with a lot of USC flavor to it. I mean, certainly Pala'ie Goteote and Raymond Scott, both guys that are committed to USC that'll be playing side by side with each other on the defensive side of the ball in the 7-on-7 tournament. And Elijah Griffin is a guy that I think is a heavy USC lean right now. Ashari Croswell is also on that team. So and Cameron Latu is one of the defensive linemen, one of the few defensive linemen that we're going to be watching here, is also a part of that team. Though, as I said, I don't know the connection with, you know, the 7-on-7 and the lineman challenge is sort of, you know, ambiguous. But still, those guys hanging out with each other and everything, and that's sort of a very pro-USC team. Harold Joyner Jr. is also a running back. Now, he's a 6'4", 210-pound running back from Alabama that, you know, has USC in his top six. Kind of an interesting prospect. You figure, you know, a top prospect from Alabama is going to be very difficult for USC to get. But nonetheless, still another guy on that Alpha Menace team. So that team sort of stood out to me when I was doing the preview and I was breaking down who to watch and sort of where the focus would be. Alpha Menace is an interesting team. Now, to go back to your question, who are the guys that I'm really excited to watch? Who are the guys that I haven't really seen? I've seen a bunch of these guys already play for Alpha Menace. I want to see Tariq Johnson. He's the, you know, 6'2", almost 6'3", 200-pound safety / cornerback from Jacksonville, Florida, a guy that USC's been recruiting a long time, a guy that has talked a lot about coming out to the West Coast and officially visiting USC and UCLA. So he's not just interested in USC, but he's interested in the West Coast and he's interested in taking a visit. You know, we talked just recently, specifically in the war room this past Friday, about USC in the defensive back position. Really good source, chatted with last week, talked about Elijah Griffin, obviously being a USC lean. A lot of people know that. But more importantly, talked about Isaac Taylor Stewart. And Isaac Taylor Stewart, from my perspective, I think it's going to be a difficult recruitment. I think he's a guy that likes recruiting. I think he's pretty open. I know his dad is involved very much with the recruiting process, and that's going to be an aspect that USC has to sort of negotiate a little bit. But this source told me I'd be surprised if Isaac Taylor's dude didn't end up with USC. Now, obviously, really? there's a lot that can happen between, you know, now and the end of the season. We got to see how USC plays. We got to see what happens with Imam Marshall, because that's been bantered around a little bit. You know, is he a guy that could leave early? Obviously, he has to have a very good year because he hasn't done a whole lot to this point. But we've seen guys leave, you know, with USC that sometimes are cusp draft picks. And you don't know. I mean, obviously, when Imam Marshall came to USC, he sort of had a three-year plan. You know, he was one of the top guys.
Five-star dude.
Five-star guy, number, you know, like one of the top cornerbacks in the country. And so you wonder, okay, if he has a good enough year, that was the plan before he was coming in USC. Does he just stick with that regardless of kind of where he's going in the draft? But nonetheless, this individual thought that Isaac Taylor Stewart was really a solid lean to USC right now, and really USC was the school to beat. So when you look at that, you say, okay, Elijah Griffin, that's a guy that you look at as being a very heavy lean to USC. And then you look at Isaac Taylor Stewart. I don't know that USC is going to really spin their wheels a whole lot on a guy like Tariq Johnson. I mean, certainly if Tariq Johnson wants to come in and he wants to just visit, you know, they'll have a spot open for a guy like that. I mean, you're going to make room for a guy like that. But I just don't know that there's really a lot of cornerbacks nationally that USC is going to really put a whole lot of investment into if they feel good about those two players. So, you know, Tariq Johnson's a guy that I definitely want to see. I know 24/7 actually has him ranked as a safety. Scout has him ranked as a cornerback. His film is ridiculous. He is definitely the prototypical type of defensive back that Clancy Pendergast wants, especially as a cornerback, because he is 6'2", and he's got that size. And we know that USC probably, and this is also something we talked about in the war room, are going to lose Marcus Johnson. Marcus Johnson was a guy that, you know, committed actually before his brother Greg Johnson committed and then has already signed with USC. He's on campus now. Yeah. But Marcus Johnson, who transferred from Hawkins to Corona High School, and obviously that Hawkins High School thing just completely blew up and those guys are all over the place. Marcus Johnson's a guy that just never really seemed to fit with what USC wanted from a profile standpoint at cornerback.
He wasn't, you know, this big corner. That
not at all. And some people argue he's actually better as an offensive player than a defensive player. Of course, they argue about that with Greg Johnson too. Greg Johnson maybe ends up at USC as a slot receiver or maybe an all-purpose back. But nevertheless, in terms of just the defensive backs and what USC wants at cornerback specifically, I mean, every guy that they have offered outside of maybe two guys, including Marcus Johnson, have all been over 6'1". Yeah. I mean, we're not just talking about 5'11 guys. We're talking about guys that are 6'1". They got a lot of guys out there that they're offering at cornerback are 6'2". And the guys they're offering at safeties are 6'3", 6'4". So, yeah, Marcus Johnson was always kind of like, where does he fit in? I mean, we know he's Greg Johnson's brother, and they really like Greg Johnson. But now that Greg Johnson's already signed, you know, where does Marcus Johnson fit? And again, another very good source kind of said, I don't think Marcus Johnson's going to end up at USC. So that sort of frees up a spot, of course. But I think USC kind of set on taking two cornerbacks in this class. And so again, you know, Tariq Johnson, you make room for that guy, you figure it out. Maybe he comes in as a safety. He, interestingly enough, is going to be playing on the same team as Brian Addison. And Brian Addison, we've seen plenty of this spring, is not a guy that we're necessarily
I've seen him more than anybody.
I've seen him more than my family. So, I mean, we've seen him every weekend, but the guy has been lights out at every tournament.
Oh, he's
been
always great.
Great seven-on player. The biggest question with he in USC is, does USC bring him in as an athlete, and do they potentially put him at receiver? Because he is only 175 pounds.
Yeah.
So he's not necessarily a downhill, big kind of Pete Carroll-esque safety. He's tall, but he's not necessarily a big physical guy. But, you know, he's been very good seven-on tournaments. It's really when the pads come on, can he sort of play that part with run support and the other physicality aspects of football? We know he's great in space and he's great in coverage. So that's going to be an interesting guy. He's going to be playing with Tariq Johnson. They're both in the same defensive backfield. And Talanoa Hufanga is another guy from Corvallis, Oregon, who USC is recruiting, is also on that team. So you have two potential safeties, maybe three. I think Tariq Johnson will probably play corner, but we'll kind of see. But three guys that have USC offers, and certainly I think with Addison and Tariq Johnson, that's kind of an interesting combination to see how those guys play in the same defensive backfield. That's for the untouchable team.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll be out there checking all these guys out. Make sure you check out the site. We'll have a ton of, we'll have interviews, we'll have photos, we'll have video and stuff going up.
If already, not, that stuff has already gone up, you know, because some of the guys were here earlier for the Elite 11 event and the receivers come in with the quarterback. So you already seen, we already had some Justin Fields, an interview there that went up where he's saying, you know, he is going to consider USC. I think, and again, I don't want to get ahead of our questions here. He is going to probably commit before the season, and I don't think he's going to visit USC before that point. So I think USC doesn't have a shot at getting him before he makes that commitment. It's really going to be, okay, you're committed somewhere. Do you still want to take visits during the season? And the Sam Darnold effect will also impact that. You know, if he has a good year, he's leaving early, he's going to be the number one pick, then maybe a guy like Justin Fields says, you know what, I still want to take a visit to USC. And then you start to think about, okay, what position is USC in to be able to garner that commitment?
Well, let's, quarterback's going to come up a lot. So why don't we jump to our quarterback questions, Gerard, because there's a lot. People want to know what's going on. And I'll just start up at the top. We have Jeff. He said, would love to hear the real reason Matt Corral decommitted from USC. I suppose it must have been some character-related issue for it to go south so quickly. I honestly feel that the Trojans have no patience for players who exhibit character challenges. Too bad that someone so highly recruited and set on being a Trojan has parted ways and ended what could have been a stellar opportunity at USC. In the past few years, since Clay has become our leader, he has overseen the jettisoning of several frontline roster players like Bryce Dixon, Osa Messina, Don Hill, Jabari Ruffin. It's a shame that these fellows may have very least cut short any opportunity of a college football career, and in some cases resulted in felony convictions. How do you feel about the way Coach Helton and the school administration has handled these personnel changes? That's Jeff.
Wow, that's a little bit of a it's kind of a statement. Guys, it's a question.
Yeah.
It's a little bit
those.
Of a...
We get those sometimes.
obviously, that list kind of speaks for itself. Bryce Dixon, Osa Messina, Don Hill, Jabari Ruffin to a lesser extent, because Jabari Ruffin wasn't involved...
He was a senior.
...to anything that we know of that was actually illegal off the field. You know what? He's keeping it a tight ship, and I think chemistry is a big deal, and we talked about that a little bit in the staff support article that I did, that feature. McGavin Moore's kind of talked a little bit about how big of a deal chemistry is, and I think that has a lot to do with this, and you certainly don't want distractions, and sometimes an individual player can cause a lot of distractions, and it can be sort of a domino effect inside your locker room. And so that speaks for itself. In terms of Matt Corral, we did get into the real story of why he decommitted in the war room. It wasn't this past week. I think it was the week before. But to give you the audio version.
The audio version.
The audio version, because some people just...
Bad things happen.
Reading. I'm waiting until it comes up on video. Or the podcast in this instance. What happened is that Matt Corral had an incident at a camp. And it was basically a curfew incident. He was not in his room. He was in another player's room. And one of the chaperones was looking for him and was taking role as to who was, you know, in the room and not out about on the town. And Matt wasn't there. And I guess they saw that he was actually on Instagram or Snapchat chatting away. And so when they tracked him down as to where he was, there was a little bit of a... an altercation, not a physical altercation, although there's been a little bit of he said, she said on that end of things. But an argument ensued, and it sort of ensued in front of everybody on that floor, all the other players. And that's what it was. It didn't really go any further than that. And I talked to a dozen people about this on all sides of the story. And it really didn't seem like it was that big a deal, to be honest with you. But Matt evidently was sort of already kind of on probation a little bit. You know, obviously he had that incident at Oaks Christian, which got him forced out of there, where he got in that fight, according to TMZ, with Wayne Gretzky's son. And so he was already sort of on the radar, and there were some other things that evidently had gone on, and I don't know details about that, but I've been told by a couple people there were some small things that have also gone on between that point of when he left Oaks Christian and this point where he had this latest incident. And so Clay Helton got on the phone with him and evidently sort of pressed him about it. And from what I understand is, you know, Matt felt a little defensive, felt a little cornered, and said, you know, if you don't trust me, then I shouldn't be committed to you. And basically USC said, well, we're going to look at some other quarterbacks and we may want to bring in two quarterbacks in this class. And that was basically Matt's opening to say, all right, well, then I'm decommitted. And that's what happened. Now, since then, we've heard some talk that Matt may feel like that was a little emotional decision and he felt like he needed to decommit. He was being forced to decommit, but that wasn't necessarily true. And there may be an opening there where he could end up being back with USC. Originally, when he came out, he said that he's not considering USC. And that sort of shows you it is reflective of an emotional decision.
Yeah, there was an emotion.
You know, like, USC's out. Yeah, I'm not considering them anymore. So that sort of has changed, I think. But from USC side of things, it's hard to know where they are with
not exactly with clear,
that.
Yeah.
And again, that opens up the question to where they have gone since that decommitment and sort of their actions, the strategy. Obviously, JT Daniels has become a big part of that. And I don't want to step on some questions here, but I you know, that sort of followed through and now they have to look at the 2018 class and see what other options they have to replace Matt Corral. But that in summary, without getting, I don't want to get too into details as to where he was and people he was talking to and that latest incident, that's sort of what happened.
All right. Hope you like that answer, Jeff. If you didn't read the War Room, you can get it on the podcast. We'll keep going down. This is an actual text message that we got. If you want, just so we didn't do this up at the top of the show, our Google voicemail number is 424-254-9141. So you can actually leave us a voicemail or even send us a text if you would like to text us any of your questions. And this was a text. He said, Peristyle crew, assuming the rumors are true as to why Matt Corral decommitted, is there any possibility at all that he can get back in the good graces of the coaching staff and recommit if he so desired, or has that ship sailed? Thanks for all the great work. Robert from Downey, Pac-12 Fight Zone and Sports. I don't know what that means. Class of 2000.
For I don't know. Could be, maybe he's pumping his own website there.
maybe. Do you have your own website, Robert from Downey? I don't know. But whatever we said.
Kind of a segue from the last question and kind of what I was saying. I never say never. You know, I wouldn't say that there's no way Matt Corral can't end up back in USC's class. I think that there needs to be some time. USC coaching staff right now is on vacation. So I think if anything happens, it's probably going to happen more towards the beginning of August, maybe late July. You know, when they get back in the office and they're getting ready for fall camp, maybe there's another meeting, maybe there's another conversation. But I'll never say never.
Yeah, there's been, just so Gerard mentioned it, there was a flurry of commitments, six in like 6 days or something. You know, there's a decommitment and then the six like commitments. That head right into, so the Sunday of the Rising Stars camp, literally like the next day, coaches started taking off. And we saw them. We went to the USC summer workout Thursday morning. Not Gerard, but the rest of the USCfootball.com team. And John Baxter was the only coach there. So everyone was gone. They hit the road. And this is not, you know, sometimes we see, you know, there's a vacation and they got a week here or something. Like, this is like, I think people are taking off. So they did a lot of work throughout the summer getting all this stuff ready. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of information coming. And we'll know more about the quarterback stuff. You mentioned it. The season's going to matter. Like, what, you know, there's, I don't think you're going to get a lot of answers for this quarterback situation right now. But as the season rolls along, I think pieces will start coming into place.
There is some potential that JT Daniels decides before his junior season. We've heard that from some good sources. And I know JT wants to take at least some unofficial visits. So I think it really is going to be dependent upon him getting out to see some schools unofficially before the season. But I wouldn't say that's not going to happen or that's not a potential move here before the beginning of the season, which is pretty, you know, near future. And I know there's probably going to be more questions about JT Daniels and that. So again, I don't want to step on those things, but, that definitely impacts Corral and Corral impacts JT Daniels. I'll say that right now.
Okay. This is kind of more of a process thing on the quarterbacks from Mark. In a decommitment situation like that of Matt Corral, when it's been reported that it's likely that USC effectively chose to part ways with the student athlete, is USC comfortable allowing people to think he simply chose to look elsewhere? Is that a quote-unquote bad look for USC, or do they have no choice because they can't comment on an unsigned player? Thanks of the podcast, loyal listener for the last 2 years, Mark in Santa Monica.
Yeah, they really don't have a choice. Certain things can leak, and if it was a real big issue, I know that it's funny because, you know, there's been guys who've claimed offers from USC at certain points during, you know, their recruitment. And if I think if USC thinks that's going to impact their recruitment of other players, then you'll sort of get some leaks through some sources like, no, that's not really true. And I can always figure out and verify offers, and I do so regularly. But in a lot of these situations, they're kind of hamstrung a little bit. They can't come out and make a statement and say, okay, this is what really happened with Matt Corral. And I think to some extent they believe, right or wrong, that the vagueness of some of these moves helps them in recruiting. When nobody really kind of understands what the heck they're trying to do, they feel they're at an advantage. So I think to some extent, leaving it to be sort of ambiguous, they're okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that they, you know, Matt Corral saying, you know, I decommitted, and people feeling, well, okay, you know, you didn't really just decommit because there was something about USC you didn't like. You know, USC sort of broached the subject first and you guys parted ways. I think USC doesn't really care a whole lot as to how that looks, and they feel like whoever they're going to recruit, they can give them the full story, and that's not going to affect, you know, the next quarterback that they're talking to.
And we saw this happen a lot last year when USC's strategy was different, where they picked up a lot of lower ranked, you know, three-star.
I wouldn't say this is the thing, and this is a bigger question. I wouldn't say it's totally different though, because to be honest with you, there were a lot of offers that went out this summer, and I don't know that they picked up some commitments that are not similar to the commitments that they picked up last summer, whereas they're pawns in a game of chess. And what I mean by that is that I think USC, and this is a very interesting strategy, and I don't know that it may be very smart. You sort of have a fake class in the summer. You sort of have a class that you scramble to sort of get together, and it's really sort of your plan B. It's like, let's solidify a plan B, a safety net, and then we go in the season and we see how the season goes, and if we have a good season, we can make moves and we can make changes. And because we have that class in place, people think that we're recruiting a certain way, but it may be just sort of a smokescreen as to what they really want to do postseason. Obviously, last year, you're talking about they picked up multiple commitments from guys. Yeah. And some of those guys that they picked up commitments from, I was told before they even got to commitments, they may not be guys that would last in the class. Some of the offers that went out to the summer camp, the next day, I got information, yeah, USC's not really recruiting that guy.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second. You just offered him yesterday. How does he not have an offer that you would want to take?
Right.
And you just, but I think a lot of that is, again, there's a little bait and switch going on. There's a little bit of, okay, a lot of maybe some other Pac-12 schools want to recruit based on how we're recruiting. So let's go ahead and throw some offers out there. Let's go ahead and we'll take some commitments of some guys that maybe it's not really what we want to do. And it kind of forces the hand, and they're playing on their own timeline. And so, hey, if USC went out and they only won 8 games last year, a lot of those guys that end up decommitted,
they stay committed.
Maybe they stay committed, and USC has them already, and they don't have to worry about it so much. So same being this year, we don't know how USC is going to play. A lot of people are saying, oh, they're going to be a top 3 team, and they're going to be this, and they're going to be that. But we don't know. And you could have a similar situation to 2012, where USC was preseason this, that, and the other, and then they fell flat on their faces. And that whole recruiting class became subject of decommitments and kind of not being able to sign enough guys because you had so many decommitments. If they have a class that maybe is not quite as highly touted, maybe you have less movement in that class, less fluidity. So I think, you know, while certainly the level of prospects that they have committed at this point is much higher, I don't know that they haven't made some moves. In fact, I know that they've made some moves that have been head fakes and not necessarily the true intentions of who they end up wanting to sign in February or December, I guess.
So for Mark's question, I mean, I agree with you. I think their strategy on the USC side, if it's plan B, if it's bait and switch, whatever. But So it's not, it's, I know for Mark's sample, he's basically looking at like, why do these kids come out and say they decommitted to USC and it looks bad for USC?
Yeah.
USC doesn't mind that, but it's also a case where if you were, you did get a commit from a three star cornerback or something and you really weren't intended on keeping him, you let the prospect say, hey, I'm decommitting, I'm moving on. They can't come out and say anything anyway, but even if they could, they wouldn't. They're not going to like step on this kid's toe. Yeah, we just stopped calling him.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically what happened is they stopped calling him, but the kid's allowed to say, hey, I decommitted, I'm looking elsewhere. And that, I think it works well for both sides.
Yeah, yeah.
If that makes sense. If that's what you're saying, Mark. I know what Mark's talking about. It's just they're not, you're like,
he's frustrated because he's a USC fan and he doesn't want USC to look like they're being lessened.
Right. But there's a strategy behind it.
There's
not like, I mean, this one's real. I mean, the Mackerel is more real. You're talking about a five-star dude. It could come back into the fold. But most of the other ones, the decommitments are, you know, but part of the plan more than
And it's not going to impact the rest of the recruiting process. And I think that's what Mark is a little bit skeptical of. Does this actually impact how they're able to recruit receivers or how they are able to recruit other players? You lose a five-star guy, and it's like in most instances, that's because the recruit is saying, yeah, there's something about this school that I don't like, and I want to go elsewhere. And that's not the case in this situation.
So let's move on. We still got more quarterback questions. There's going to be a whole show on just that. Hey, Ryan, this is Alex from Dothan, Alabama. Enjoy listening to the podcast. Have been listening for 6 years now. Wow, thanks, Alex. First, I wanted to wish Coach Clay Helton an early happy birthday. It's really cool that Coach Helton's birthday is the same day as mine. Serious note now, the question is for G-Mart. Gerard, how confident is USC that they can flip Tuttle, Thompson Robinson, or can they land Justin Fields? What are your thoughts?
I think there's confidence from USC's side that they can get Jack Tuttle. Nobody else is saying that. No. I mean, everyone thinks
Tuttle's this lock.
That knows Jack Tuttle says...
He's committed to Utah.
He's committed to Utah, and he's the kind of kid that's going to be committed to Utah no matter what. And so, obviously, we're cynical of that just because we've seen so many top prospects and we've seen quarterbacks obviously flip and say one thing and then do another in the recruiting process. Thompson Robinson... USC's not really recruiting him hard enough right now to gauge whether they would have a really legit shot at him. Again, you know, it's sort of, okay, between now and we get to that point of, you know, late November, early December, you know, where's UCLA at? Where's Jim Moore at? You know, is that coaching staff still there? They have another bad season. Perhaps UCLA decides they want to make a move at the coaching staff. That's going to open up Thompson Robinson, totally. But we don't know if that's going to happen. And Justin Fields, I think, is the longer shot. And then we already talked a little bit about him. Again, I think that he's going to commit somewhere, probably Florida State. And then it's going to be a matter of, okay, do you still want to take your official visits? And can USC secure an official visit? I think that's what they're positioning themselves for. And do they have a good shot at that? I think they have a reasonable shot at that. I don't want to say good. I think it's very plausible that he still takes an official visit to USC, but it's going to be hard. The biggest difference between this scenario and the one that played out last year with Jack Sears is that USC was recruiting Jack Sears the whole time. USC was one of the schools involved with Jack Sears when he was making this decision and decided to commit to Duke. And then they kept recruiting him. USC has not been involved with Jack Tuttle like that. USC basically... I don't want to say they stopped recruiting because I know they stayed in contact with some guys here and there, but they had not been really recruiting all out for any of these quarterbacks for the past year plus. So it's not like the Jack Sears situation where they flipped him from Duke. Justin Fields, they have no relationship with, or they didn't have really much of a relationship with until about, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Jack Tuttle was a guy that they really didn't talk a whole lot with. Until just recently, they kind of picked it back up with him. Dorian Thompson Robinson, same thing. Didn't really recruit him very hard because they had Matt Corral there. And so, you know, and you got Cammy Cooper. That's also a guy that we hear his name come up a lot. And he's really not talking about any other schools right now, except for Washington State. But that's another one of those things that you're a little bit cynical of, because you say, okay, yeah, sure, you're not talking about anybody Washington State, because you don't want to accidentally say something that reveals your true thoughts, maybe about a USC. Now, USC hasn't actually come through and offered him a scholarship yet. So we'll see if they do that. Maybe that changes his tune a little bit. But right now, it's very much wait and see. And certainly it's wait and see because, A, the JT Daniels possible commitment could actually even impact the 2018 commitment, or vice versa. And then we got to look at possible grad transfers or transfers just in general, and how that might impact things. You get a transfer at the end of the year, that's obviously going to impact whether you're taking the 2018 guy or not. So this quarterback situation, it's very fluid. There's a lot going on to it. And then there's the ultimate question of, well, maybe Matt Corral ends up back in the fold.
Right.
So it's very much wait and see.
Grab your popcorn. Chris wanted to know about Justin Fields. I think you kind of addressed that already. Corey, shouldn't USC be an extremely attractive place for a 2018 quarterback recruit? Sam Darnold is likely to enter the NFL draft. The quarterback race would then be wide open, even for a talented true freshman, unless Sears is clearly ready to start in 2018. We should be able to lure a top-notch quarterback now that Corral is out.
Yes and no. Yes, because of the reason stated in the question, which make it very obvious. And that, again, is a big... I mean, that's a big carrot to dangle in front of a quarterback. Jack Sears is not a guy that's going to scare off a lot of quarterbacks. Good quarterback, but more of a regional guy that I don't think a lot of people really knew about coming into his senior year. He was a guy that was here at the opening, Elite 11, but just not a guy that really was that big-name quarterback until kind of later in the process. So I don't think a lot of people know about Jack Sears. A lot of those quarterbacks that are being recruited aren't really thinking about Jack Sears, and certainly they're not thinking about Matt Fink. So Sam Darnold, that spot is vacated, and he goes, or I mean, we're not going to know where he gets drafted until after those guys sign, right, but is projected as maybe being the first pick in the NFL draft. Man, that's the golden ticket. Yeah. You feel like you can walk into that spot, you're going to have all eyes on you. And so, yeah, that definitely impacts all those guys. And that's what makes it just a different situation, again, than maybe Jack Sears. While USC hasn't been recruiting these guys all along, that spot opening up with Sam Darnold potentially leaving, it's just going to be so attractive to so many of those quarterbacks. And I think that's why there's confidence within the McKay Center. Whereas everybody from the outside talking to these quarterbacks, it's looking at their actions and how they talk about things and sort of how they've been throughout the process. But only USC knows what that position entails and how really attractive it can be. I mean, they talked about it. I remember when Pete Carroll's staff was there, they always talked about, well, who's going to get the golden ticket? It was like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Who's going to get the golden ticket? When they were recruiting a quarterback, it's all about who's going to get the golden ticket. So I think... maybe USC it's overplayed. Maybe they're overstating the value of that spot, but then maybe people on the outside looking in are undervaluing how big that is if Sam Darnold leaves.
It's funny, we had Daniel Jeremiah on this week. So if you don't know him, NFL Network analyst, he watches film all the time, knows everything about USC. So we had him on the podcast this week. And he was talking about like the perception in the NFL is, oh, USC quarterbacks are busts and that, you know, stuff like it could work on it. And I was like, and we talked about it. It's like, well, but when's the last time a USC quarterback wasn't drafted? Like, who was the last USC starting quarterback that wasn't drafted? And even like John David Booty's drafted. And All these guys, most of them are still in the league, getting paychecks, starting games. Cody Kessler starting games. You know, Matt Cassel never even played and started. He started a whole bunch of games. You know, Carson Palmer still doing his thing. It's just there's a lot of guys there that are, you know, Sanchez performing well. He thinks that basically they weren't as good as high as they were drafted. So maybe they underperformed as far as like the hype kind of leading up to them. But to be a quarterback in the league is not easy.
No, there's not a lot of spots available. And that's why they called the golden ticket. If you're going to the NFL, I mean, Cody Kessler, he got drafted higher than I thought he would get
way
drafted.
Higher. And he's starting.
And the fact that that says a lot about Cleveland. But but the fact that, yeah, like you said, he's actually playing games in the NFL, and he was probably one of the least highly thought of quarterbacks coming out of USC.
Matt Barkley's still in the league. You know, he's with the 49ers now. I'm like, you're still on a team. You're holding a clipboard, or whatever. Like, you're making a paycheck, but you're good enough to do something. You know, Bear Secutor for, he said, GM, do you see Hilton's mapping out of quarterback recruiting with Corral's decommitment as a 2-year cycle rather than just one with renewed push for JT Daniels, i.e., wrap up Daniels and sign a dual threat redshirt candidate like Mac Fink for balance and insurance in 2018? This would also be a very solid pipeline if Darnold announced in January he is staying, a la Andrew Luck. Seems to me if you can't sign a top 10 quarterback who can actually compete for the job in 2018, this is the way to go. Barrett Skeeter.
A couple of different thoughts there, obviously, in that question. But this does kind of go back to the point of strategy, and it does bring in JT Daniels into the conversation. And so here's one thing that I know. Matt Corral and JT Daniels are not going to end up at the same school. Okay, that's not going to happen.
That's pretty fair.
That is not going to
happen. We've
heard
that from a lot.
So you are recruiting two different plans there. If Matt Corral comes back into the fold, you know JT Daniels is gone. And that's really where USC was. They had Matt Corral committed, and they knew JT Daniels was just not going to follow Matt Corral. And so they were, you know, either not going to take a quarterback in 2019, or they're obviously looking somewhere else in that class to take a quarterback. Maybe a guy that was a lesser quarterback. Now, if you're taking JT Daniels, you kind of flip that strategy on its head and you say, okay, so 2018, do we take maybe a little lesser quarterback, a guy that's not going to scare off JT Daniels, but know that we're going to get JT Daniels. And the caveat here with JT Daniels is the fact that if you sign him, or let's say you have him committed because he's going to sign in 2019, there's a very, very good chance that you get Amon-Ra St. Brown committed. They are a bit of a package deal. Now, I don't want to say they are a package deal because they have never referred to themselves as a package deal, but everybody we talk to behind the scenes links them together, and if JT Daniels was to commit to USC, that would really strengthen their position for Amon-Ra St. Brown. And so now you're talking about the number one receiver in the 2018 class and potentially the number one quarterback, or, you know, for sure top three quarterbacks in the 2019 class. So that's sort of a 2-for-1 trade when you're looking at Corral for JT Daniels and Amon-Ra. And then you also have the potential of maybe you're just bringing in a grad quarterback to be that 2018 guy, so somebody can step in right away if Sam Darnold leaves. Because certainly, Sam Darnold leaves, you know, JT Daniels is going to be there, but he's going to be there the next year. So you do still have that gap.
Yeah.
And USC has to fill that gap. And they probably have to fill that gap with somebody. I don't think it seems to me difficult to not take a quarterback in 2018 at all. If Sam Darnold leaves, I think you got to take a quarterback.
Right.
I mean, you've
one
only,
way or another.
Yeah, you've got Matt Fink and you've got Jack Sears, and you want three scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. So that's the dynamic, and certainly it is a 2-year cycle, and you are looking at it because now you're bringing in not only JT Daniels into the conversation, but Amon-Ra the year earlier. So it's dynamic, and USC's trying to set themselves up to obviously get the best deal that they can, the best situation. And certainly right now, it seems like at least for the past couple weeks, the JT Daniels Amon-Ra thing has been center stage. And that's what we've been hearing about the most. And those guys were both at USC twice in 1 week, talking with the coaching staff. And certainly, you know, JT Daniels' eyes opened up wide when Matt Corral decommitted. And so that's certainly going to be a big play, and does it impact whether USC would even want to bring Matt Corral back into the play now that they know how they may have the sort of situation they may walk into with JT Daniels and Amon-Ra? You know, now do you start to second guess? Well, maybe we could do better than bringing Matt Corral back into the fold. Maybe we do want to just take a guy that's maybe a lesser guy that's not going to, you know, be an issue for JT Daniels, or just bring in a guy that's older as a transfer. The problem is you still have that gap, and you have, if Sam Darnold is leaving, really the best of all worlds is Sam Darnold comes back and then you get JT Daniels and you get Amon-Ra. I think if you could say, what's the old, like, if you could pick a situation, a scenario,
yeah,
that would be the one you would pick. That would be what you would want. But of course, we don't know that that's even possible because, right, you know, Sam Darnold is going to be
very good at the football.
Yeah, if he's a top 10 pick, he's got to go. I don't think he can stick around. And so the potential of that happening is pretty high.
So that kind of answers Paul in Vegas's question. Basically, what you're saying is it's mutually exclusive. There's JT Daniels or there's Matt Corral. There's not both. So that's Paul in Vegas. That was kind of your
question. Sorry, Paul. I'm trying not to step on questions that we haven't got to. But yeah, I mean, that's just a conversation with the quarterback situation in general.
And then Tarek had a question. Is USC high on Jack Tuttle because he is the best quarterback for their system or because he's most likely to flip?
That's a good question. I would say probably a little bit of both. I don't know that Jack Tuttle is a great system guy for them. Granted, I'm still trying to figure out what USC views as a good quarterback for their system, because we could go right back to that JT Daniels conversation and say, is JT Daniels a good fit for their system? Because we've seen what Sam Darnold has done.
Right.
Being able to scramble, being able to be a weapon with his legs, having that dual threat capability. And Sam Darnold is not, he's a very good athlete, but he's not a 4-5 guy. He's not Vince Young. He's not Cam Newton, but he's got incredible awareness. He's got great pocket awareness. He has sort of a je ne sais quoi in terms of kind of staying away from pressure and being able to see downfield and keep his eyes downfield and make plays downfield. And he's got a rocket arm. And so if you're saying, look, this is the best that USC's offense has looked in years, that needs to be the guy. You need to find a way to mold him and to reproduce him in some other facet in each class. JT Daniels is not that guy.
Right.
JT Daniels can't scramble. JT Daniels is not very athletic and he's not very mobile outside the pocket. But he has a great arm. He's incredibly accurate. He's very smart. He's a great pocket quarterback. So
that's on the coaches then, that they got to make sure they use a guy. If he's the guy, you got to use him the right way.
This is
I don't think they did that with
Kessler or certainly Max Brown.
Max Brown, I don't think they did him any favors.
And you hit the nail on the head, because what it does is it puts pressure on your O-line coach, it puts pressure on your running backs coach, it puts pressure on the whole offense, because when you have a pocket quarterback, your O-line better be pass blocking. Okay, your left tackle better be damn good. Your running backs better pick up pass protection. Your receivers better get open downfield. Yeah. Your offensive system and design has to be amazing and has to be very good. Everybody has to be on point so that quarterback can get the ball out of his hands and get it downfield in the passing game. And we didn't see that with USC in the past few years. We hadn't seen it with Clay Helton the year before when he was an interim coach. That offense struggled mightily at the end of the year. It was terrible. And it was terrible at the beginning of the year with a pocket quarterback. And that is why I didn't predict, but I said when everybody was asking us to predict who's going to be the starting quarterback, I didn't say I predict Sam Darnold's going to be the starting quarterback. I said Sam Darnold should be the starting quarterback, because I think in college in general, a guy that can improvise and can play outside the playbook, who can go outside the play design and improvise, gives your offense so many more chances, to just get a first down, to move the change. I mean, it's basically like this. How many opportunities did USC's offense get to stay on the field because Sam Darnold made a little move and didn't get sacked? Not that he completed a pass downfield, not that he ran for 20 or 30 yards downfield, the fact that he just threw the ball away and didn't get sacked. Whereas if you have Max Brown in there, he gets sacked, you're behind the chains, and all of a sudden you got to punt the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, these little subtle things that happen with the quarterback position and what Sam Darnold was able to do just by being a little bit elusive, third down and three. And I think USC didn't do this enough last year. Let Sam Darnold hold the ball. He can get 3 yards on the read option. And USC has that read option look, and they're running it with a guy like Max Brown, who nobody respects as a runner. Right. That defensive end is crashing down the line of scrimmage at that running back. They don't believe for a second that Max Brown in that situation is going to keep the ball. But with Sam Darnold, you have to respect him. So now all of a sudden your running back has a little more room to be able to run on third and three, because he knows that defensive end isn't crashing down on the end. So again, I just question with JT Daniels, is that really the guy that you want? Is that really, you know, the style of quarterback that is going to make the offense go? But you know what? That's 2019. So maybe you have JT Daniels commit, and then you have Amon-Ra commit, and then Amon-Ra signs, and then things change. You know, it's recruiting. And so you have to keep an open mind as to, you know, how strategy is sort of here now with things. And sometimes the way things are going and the way things appear aren't necessarily, that's not plan A. And it kind of goes back to that we were talking about, you know, with USC and how they recruit during the summer. It's almost like they're recruiting plan B during the summer, and they're recruiting plan B to set up plan A in December and January.
One last quarterback question. Tarek wants to know, do you see USC offering Tanner McKee soon?
No. I don't. And again, I think it has to do a little bit with stylistically. He doesn't necessarily fit with what USC is looking at. I think if there's an offer that goes out soon, I still think it's Cam Cooper, because that's the guy that I've been hearing the most about, the quarterback from Utah who is committed to Washington State.
Okay. That's all our quarterback stuff. Phew, we had a lot to get to. I'm going to go up to kind of more general recruiting stuff, and then we'll get into some different position stuff. At camps like Rising Stars, do coaches discuss strategy with one another when they aren't on the field with the players? Will Coach Helton be picking Jim Harbaugh's brain? Thanks as always, Eric in Duck Country. And he's referring to, so the first Rising Stars camp, like Jim Harbaugh, but they had like 100 different college coaches, I think, at both events at the Rising Stars.
Yeah, but strategy in terms of recruiting or in terms of game strategy?
I think it's probably not recruiting strategy. He didn't really specify in his question, but I would think, you know, maybe just talk coaching. I don't know.
I know last year when TCU came to one of the USC camps, T. Martin spent a lot of time with the TCU co-coordinators. So I know from that standpoint, the camp, it was the lineman camp, and the camp wasn't really all that great. And so T and those guys were actually back in the office, and I think they were cutting up film, and I think they were looking at stuff, and I think they were, you know, a little chalk talk. I don't know about Harbaugh. Kind of don't think so.
I wouldn't think with someone that high profile.
He's hanging out. He's there to be seen. He's got his cleats on. He's got his khakis on. And he's shaking hands and he's kissing babies. And that's kind of why he's there. I don't know that there was really a lot of opportunity for he and Helton to sit back and be able to talk football and talk strategy and play design. I don't know that for a fact. I mean, maybe T. Martin and Pep Hamilton, who was there, maybe they got to talk a little bit. I don't think it was quite, you know, as laid out, or maybe the opportunity to chat as much as last year with the TCU coaches and the USC coaches. I don't think probably there was as much. I think with TCU and USC also, they're really not playing each other, and there's really not a lot of overlap there. And TCU had USC come in for their satellite camps, because remember last year you had satellite camps. So USC came out to several TCU hosted satellite camps all over Texas. And so I think there was a little bit of a relationship with those two staffs also. And I think that obviously played into them having a little more time and maybe a little more comfort with each other talking about X's and O's.
We had a question from Kevin and David, kind of similar. I want to basically, it's some of the language that we use maybe that we're talking about, offers that are committable or not, some of the different strategies. So Kevin was saying, you made reference to some offers that went out for and USC commitments that USC took that essentially were to keep other schools guessing on their toes as far as their strategy goes. Could you elaborate on any detail of an example or two of how this played out? And David wants to know, you talk about committable offers. How does that work? Do coaches actually tell recruits that they have an offer, but they can't accept it, or they wait until the kid wants to commit and then tell them they can't accept the commitment at that point? Thanks. So that's David. So kind of like, I mean, this is a new recruiting language now. We didn't really have this 10 years ago. I don't think it was the same thing.
Yeah. And it goes into sort of the summer strategy and talking about, you know, that sort of almost fake class, or the class that sort of is the plan B. And then you kind of move forward with the recruiting process after the end of the season. And I guess probably the most defined question here is, what is a committable offer? And, you know, when you refer to a committable offer as to a non-committable offer, how exactly does that work? Well, it works differently with different players. I think in some instances, it's really just to help the player out, or maybe help the high school coach out, or help that 7-on-7 outfit out. It's like, hey, you know what? We'll help you get on the map. We'll help you get some looks from some other players. And at the same time, it sort of disguises, you know, who we're offering and who we really want. And it kind of keeps people guessing on the board. In other instances, I think it's, you know, we want to get our foot in the door with this kid. And we want to make a first good impression. And that's what we see, I think, the most of. And we see it nationally, where we've seen so many scholarship offers go out. And it's just, and I always know I'm going to say it again, and people know what I'm going to say right now. It's flowers on a first date.
Yeah.
It's, hey, it's really nice to meet you. You know, we want to make a good first impression, and we want you to like us. Here's a scholarship offer. And the kid can go on Twitter and go, I'm blessed with the scholarship offer. Yeah, thank you, USC. This is my 700th scholarship offer. It's so awesome. And all everybody goes, oh, wow, you're blowing up. You're awesome, man. Especially if it's an out-of-state kid from Florida. People are going, wow, USC's coming all the way out here. And meanwhile, USC may never even seen this kid play in person. So if that kid wanted to turn around and commit on the spot, they'd probably say, well, wait a second. We want to make sure that you're comfortable and you really want to commit to USC and you really know what you're getting into. We don't want you to commit and then waver. We want you to be able to come out here and see us. And that all of a sudden changes, you know, whether it's a committable offer or not. And that's USC saying, you know, we want to see you, more of you as well. And so that's going to give us some time to be able to kind of figure out whether we really actually want to follow up on that scholarship offer and actually take your commitment. So that's kind of the two different scenarios that tend to play out. And we've seen more and more of it. And that's why, you know, scholarship offers. I mean, I remember when I first got into this business and I started writing, I was on top of every scholarship offer USC gave out. You know, I was trying to call every kid that got a scholarship offer because those scholarship offers meant something. Those scholarship offers were usually coming as a result of USC evaluating a kid and saying, we want them. That's not true anymore. That ended probably 5-6 years ago. And nowadays, a scholarship offer is just sort of a statement. It's getting your foot in the door with the kid to say, hey, we offered you a scholarship. So later on, somebody can't say, oh, you know, USC, they didn't offer you until the very end. And we were in on you first and all that kind of stuff. Well, that kind of nullifies any of that talk.
Yeah, the language is definitely different. You know, it's it helped the kids try to amass these things. And there's no official, like, there's not some paper that goes out that, you know, here's your offer that you can put on the wall.
That there is.
A tweet.
There is an official offer that comes later in September of their senior year. But yeah, initially,
you can actually sign.
When all these offers come, it's always, yeah, sophomore, junior year, and it's nothing but a phone call or an email or a tweet. And sometimes it's not even from the head coach. So yeah, they're definitely, it's all about just the recruiting process and just playing the game.
Yeah. All right. Hopefully David, Kevin answered your questions. Let's go to Shalom from the South Bay. With the assessment of some highly ranked recruits as not being overly competitive or having a tendency to coast and take plays off, I was wondering, who are some of the prospects that were labeled that way that went on to great success at the college level, whether it was at USC or elsewhere in the NFL? It seems to me that competitive fire is essential to success when competing at the highest levels, which is why I loved how Pete Carroll's teams embraced the mantra of always compete and USC's general spirit of fight on. Are there any players that you can remember that turned it on once they got to D1? Thanks and keep up the great work. Fight on. Shalom, South Bay. He's SGN43 on the Peristyle.
That's one of those questions you got to kind of sit back and like think about. There is one guy that comes to mind, though, that definitely got the label of being lazy in high school that has gone on to be a very good college player. And that's JoJo Mathis. JoJo Mathis out of Upland High School didn't have good grades and was labeled as incredibly lazy. And I'd seen some instances where I would agree with that assessment. He did look lazy and he wasn't a guy that looked totally motivated, but he's turned out to be a very good player at Washington. So that would be the one guy that just, you know, without sitting here for half an hour trying to go through all the millions of people and players that I've seen, that's one instance where thus far has been pretty successful in college, and we don't know what's going to happen if it goes on in the NFL, but is a guy that certainly had that label in high school.
You know, I think you see more examples of these they're not players that usually end up at USC if they have that kind of thing. USC probably not recruiting them anymore, but you hear they end up at San Diego State or something, or whatever. They end up somewhere like in the Mountain West, maybe out here, where the big schools kind of backed off on them, and they're like, yeah, they're whatever, for whatever reason, and then they end up shining in college. So I think you'll probably see more of an example of that at some of the, you know, maybe non-Power 5 schools.
At that point, Sark was at Washington, and Sark was definitely taking more waivers on those type of players, bringing in guys that were cusp guys in terms of character and just going after, like, the best talent he possibly could, obviously because he was recruiting sort of under USC to some extent. JoJo Mathis was a guy that they're willing to take the chance on and say, hey, you know, he's a great talent. We're not going to get a lot of talented guys like this. And the off-the-field stuff, he's figured out. The light's gone on. I mean, these are kids, and there is a maturity factor there. And certainly, you know, somebody could get in their ear and just convince them, you know, look, this is in your best interest to work harder, and you have a great opportunity. And sometimes it's like, boom, okay, yeah, you know what, you're right.
Let's go to Joe in Burbank. He said, first off, great recruiting podcast you run on USCfootball.com. Thank you, Joe. Looking at the Pac-12, what's your impression of how the other teams are doing? Anyone putting together a sneaky good class? After USC and UCLA, who do you predict will have the next three best classes in the conference? Thank you, Joe in Burbank. And right off the bat, Oregon's already in the top. They already have a top five class, so they've made a lot of moves already.
Oregon's made a lot of moves, but they've also got like 16, 17 commitments too. So there's a little bit of quantity there to go along with quality. I think they've definitely got some interesting players. I mean, Adrian Jackson was a guy that we saw at the Under Armour camp earlier in the year. He's a pretty good looking player. Trayshawn Harrison, the safety out of Seattle, just committed to Oregon, I think, just this past week. He's a guy that's a very good player. Could play safety, could play receiver, a guy that USC recruited, but never really had a great shot at. And I think Washington may still be involved with him, and that's going to be sort of a battle between Oregon and Washington throughout the year, even though he's committed early. But, you know, the class that I think...
Ray Lindsay is from right down the street from where we are right now.
But the class...
He's a top 100 guy.
He's okay.
Okay.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, there's some guys that are rated there, and you go, okay, yeah, that's, you know... And then they've got, you know, 16 commits, and that's kind of sort of... a high number for this point in time, you know, where USC's got 11. And usually around this time of year, USC's closer to like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
So they usually don't even have this many commits. But I would say Washington kind of stands out to me with only 9 commits. And they're rated 15 right now nationally. And I just sort of like that they're going after guys that I think are specific players to their system. Like Austin Osborne is a good example of a player, you know, 6'3", 180 pounds, really just a prolific receiver in terms of being a possession guy that has great hands, that catches the ball, that gets open. Everybody talks about, you know, Jalen Hall and Amon-Ra and all these guys in premium sports that we've seen. I mean, Austin Osborne probably caught as many passes as all those guys. And he's just kind of an underrated guy. You also look at Marcus Spicer. Marcus Spicer was one of the best receivers I saw all spring. And really kind of low key, USC liked him a lot, but I mean, just Washington got him on early. And again, a system guy. And I kind of see where Chris Peterson is recruiting their kind of guys. And that's always intriguing to me when, you know, you're not looking at stars or whatever, you're just looking for fit. I mean, Draco Bynum, another guy that, you know, good looking player, you know, it's about 250-pound, 6'5 defensive end who maybe, you know, kind of a strong side guy and not the most athletic, but like could end up being a really good college player. And that's what you're looking for. I mean, you're looking for really good college players. People get kind of caught up in the whole pro prospect side of things. But if you're USC, you want guys that are going to help you win games.
Yeah.
You know, not the 49ers, not Seattle Seahawks. So, you know, I kind of like what Washington is doing. I think they have like a, and you want to talk about sneaky, I mean, everybody's kind of talking about Oregon. I think Washington's kind of doing that. They're sort of.
They got two quarterbacks too that are Elite 11 finals.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Sermon and Yanoff. I think, I don't know if, I don't know if both of them are Elite 11 guys. Are they both Elite 11
Well, they
guys?
Were both in the finals. Yanov was injured. He was on crutches,
I That's think. Right. Yeah, Yankov. Yeah, Yankov is... Yankov? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think Yankov. It's Colson Yankov is... Yeah, he's hurt. That's right. And then Sermon is the other guy that they have. Jack Sermon. They also have Jacob Sermon, the linebacker who was at Loyola, but transferred. I think he's at Brentwood Academy now.
That's Peter Sermon's son.
Peter Sermon's son, right. Yeah. And Jack Sermon is Peter Sermon's nephew.
Okay.
I think that sort of fits what the question is, you know, kind of like the sneaky good class. I kind of think Washington has that right now. They're sort of doing a little bit what Stanford sort of does, you know, and Stanford, I think, is like four commits, so they're way off the radar right now. But, you know, they're getting their guys, their type of guys.
Yeah. So right now, there's Oregon at four, USC at six, Washington at 15, and UCLA at 16. So those are the only Pac-12 teams ranked in the top 25. Tark wants to know, do you see the 2018 class being like the 2013 class? Low numbers, but high star quality.
No, because I don't think the numbers are going to be that low. I mean, I think we're still, at the end of the day, going to be around 20. I think earlier that I was hearing 21 and 22. I don't know if USC is going to be able to get that high now. I kind of pedaled it back to like 20. So I don't know if it's going to be a really small class that's just going to be high in ranking, although I think it is going to be high in ranking. So I think it could be potentially another – I mean, USC's six right now. I mean, they could definitely –
3.91 star ranking. Always stars are high. That's always a high.
They're always pretty high. But, yeah. I mean, I think for sure they could end up being top three if not compete for number one for sure. If – they have a good year. If they go back to the Rose Bowl, or if they go to the college football playoff, and things just, you know, they line up for them, I think they could have a fantastic year again, no doubt.
Okay, we have one from Amir. He said, well,
Amir Carlisle?
No. Oh. Great job as always. Love the site and the work you guys do. I have a few unrelated questions, so I'll number them for ease. So number one, any news on potential grad transfers into USC?
No.
No real news.
No real news.
But there's still stuff could happen.
Yes. So
stay tuned for that. Two, will all the walk-ons who get scholarships need to have their scholarships renewed every year? Will Helton not renew one?
Don't know if Helton's going to renew one or not, but yeah, you got to have them renewed.
Yeah, so I believe I believe everyone that was given the scholarships from last year have kept them. I haven't heard of anything else, but we'll see, you know, usually when the fall thing
tends to be when they announce that stuff in fall practice.
Yeah, so we'll know more then, but I think numbers wise they'll be okay. They don't need to like take any walk-on scholarships away. And then the offer to Matthew Tago is it a backup, or do they like him that much? Can't imagine that he is better than the guys we have, and or Tui Tuialapupu and Merlin. Is he? Thanks for Amir.
I kind of feel like that scholarship offer was kind of taken by Kanai Maunga. He's the 6'2", 210-pound linebacker that committed from Hawaii. Sort of similar players. Tago's a little bigger, but, the linebacker situation is questionable as is, because USC has four committed linebackers, and really they can only take four committed linebackers. We thought perhaps because it was a deep year, maybe they would take five. But I think Cameron McDonald's commitment really impacts sort of doubling up at a position. Whether that be receiver or whether that be a linebacker or a defensive back, I think because they're taking a tight end in this class, that takes away a scholarship offer from the receiver spot, which I think was possibly going to be three, but now is two. And I know people are still talking about three, but I don't necessarily see how they're going to be able to take three plus a tight end. And again, I don't think you can take five linebackers plus a tight end. So I think Cameron McDonald sort of takes up one of those spots. And Munga is a player that they saw a lot of. They saw him at the first Rising Stars camp. They invited him back for the Elite camp. He played well at both those camps. He looked good at both those camps. And then they saw him at the All-Poly camp in pads. And they watched him closely. And that's when they offered him the scholarship. And he committed, you know, about a week later. He's a Sam. So he's, you know, going to play outside. He's basically going to play the Yochenna Nwosu position. He's got to put on some weight. He's got to get bigger. He's got to be closer to 230 to be able to really play that position, play it well. But he's a guy that can be an edge rusher, but also is athletic enough. He can play off the line. He can play a little bit in space. The biggest question is, okay, so you got Raymond Scott, who's committed. You got Bull Calvert, who's committed. You got Palaiʻi Goteʻote, who's committed. Okay, we know that Goteʻote is a guy you're going to take. You would think that you would want to keep Raymond Scott, but he is open. He is looking at other schools, and he's talking about the SEC a little bit. But, I mean, 6'2", 220, and playing inside that will position, I think he's kind of prototypical, exactly what you want for that type of defense. So I would say that you would want to keep him committed. And he did make it to the elite camp, and he got coached up a lot, and he talked with USC a lot, and I think that was a good sign. Bo Calvert ended up showing up to the Rising Stars camp, the second edition of the Rising Stars camp, the last one that we had last week. And he looked pretty good. He didn't look bad. He's very underestimated athletically. A lot of people see this guy as a 6'5", 215-pound white guy. And, you know, I'm sorry to say it, but people are sort of racist. And the recruit process, it's like that the movie, was it Moneyball? With Brad Pitt?
Yeah, yeah.
That's sort of how scouting is. You there's prejudice, there's stereotypes, but you're categorizing to try to evaluate attributes. And that's just a natural human nature. It's just a human reaction to sort of categorize and say, okay. And I think a lot of people just go, oh, he's a big, tall, white guy. You know, he's not that athletic. Bullshit. What do you mean he's not that athletic? He ran the fastest time of all the linebackers at the Los Angeles Nike camp, which people say was the most stacked Nike camp for linebackers in the history of the freaking event. So, no, he's plenty of fast enough. That's not the issue. Is he fluid enough? Can he bend? Well, Gerard, have you ever seen Porter Gustin play? He's not very flexible either, but he's also 265, 270 pounds. And so that's the biggest difference. He came to USC at 245. Bo Calvert is 215 right now. So there's got to be a lot of work put in with Bo Calvert. And the physicality is a really bigger question for me. It's not his athleticism. It's how physical can he be playing that predator position. Now, what we saw early in the recruiting process was USC go after a few different guys who could play that predator position. And Cameron Latu is really the guy that everybody sort of goes, okay, that's probably going to be the guy. They take the commitment, and then Bo Calvert sees that, and he decommits. Well, the latest that we have on Cameron Latu is that he's very serious about Alabama. And he's 6'5", 235. He's a little more of a finished product. When you're talking about, okay, who can you bring a guy that can play in for Porter Gustin if Porter Gustin ends up leaving to the NFL, which we sort of anticipate. But the thing is that predator position, and we talked about this in the past, you've got Hunter Echols, you've got Oluwale Betiku, you've got Connor Murphy. You got three guys behind Porter Gustin.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily like there's no depth at that position. Now, there's always the possibility Connor Murphy maybe moves inside, or maybe Oluwale moves inside. They could change some things, but I mean, they're okay at that position right now. So I don't see them doubling up there. You're good with Goteʻote. You kind of, I think, want to keep Raymond Scott. So I don't know. I don't see a lot of shifting here, and you still have Solomon Tuliaʻapupu there. So is Monga just a guy that you bring in as a bookmark, just in case things don't go well during the season and you're not able to get Tuliaʻapupu? Or is he actually a guy you take, and you're taking Solomon Tuliaʻapupu too, and you're expecting a decommitment from somebody else? We don't know right now. Nobody knows. That's a very interesting thing. And again, that sort of makes me skeptical about this class right now.
Yeah, that's funny. That's really for the linebacker questions we had, Tarek with a Q, so we have two Tareks, a different Tarek. He was basically asking him about that. Do you think Monga would scare away those other guys? You think that's...
No. Okay. He's not scaring away anybody. He's a good player. And you know what? There's a little bit in Johnny Nansen we trust, because Johnny Nansen has gone out and he's grabbed some guys that have been under the radar, specifically Jordan Iosefa, who turned out to be guys. I mean, Jordan Iosefa, they really like Jordan Iosefa. Yeah. And he played as a true freshman last year. He played two different positions as a true freshman last year. He played inside linebacker and outside linebacker. So That's pretty impressive for a guy that was just kind of off the radar Hawaiian kid who was a two-star, three-star guy.
And then, what? So if Raymond Scott, or I guess anyone else decommits, this is the other Tarik with a K, is Merlin Robinson a guy that USC would pursue harder?
No. Merlin Robinson has some off-field things, and I've heard that USC is cool on him a lot. So I think right now he's not a guy that's really in that that inner bubble of, you know, do we take him, do we not take him? I think he's sort of down in the food chain a little bit right now.
Okay. I think we're going to switch to receivers and talk some receivers. We have a voicemail question. Our buddy JD from DC, here it is.
JD from DC with a recruiting question for Gerard GM, talking wide receiver commitments and recruitment. How fast is Andre Hunt? I heard some rumor he actually has clocked a 4.4. If you look at his film, he looks that fast in pads, but other people are saying he's up in the 4.6 range. What's your impression of his speed from what you've seen? Also, how does Cameron McDonald fit in the scheme of things, and are we going to take another tight end in this class, particularly one who consistently will play with their hand on the ground?
Yeah, I think speed-wise, there's a lot of questions about Andre Hunt. He ran a 4.69 at the opening in Oakland, and really, there weren't a lot of guys who ran really good times at that camp. I think there were very few guys that got into the 4.5s. The bigger question for me was his shuttle time. He ran a 4.68, which is very slow, and it was slow relative to the other receivers at that camp. I think it was the second worst shuttle time at that camp. And it's slow relative to just other even positions. Even linemen are running better than 4.68s at these camps. So you have to understand the shuttle time is something that is confusing for a lot of kids. They don't really know how to run it. There's not, I mean, everybody runs a 40. You know, everybody knows how to go down and certainly there's technique and there's mechanics, but running straight in the straight line fast is what these kids do. And so while there's a lot of preparation that can cut down times and you can definitely improve your 40 time with proper training, it's not like a shuttle time where the kids don't know that, you know, you're supposed to touch the line. You have to, you know, you have to kind of start in a certain direction in a certain way. And so they screw it up a lot and they do it over and over again. It's not like they say, okay, you're going to run your shuttle. The kid doesn't know how to run it and he gets a bad time. And then he runs it again and then he gets another bad time. And they take the best time out of those two bad times. We see kids run the shuttle and they slip and they fall. We see them run them, you know, 7-8 times over and over again until they actually get a clean shuttle run. So 4.68 is really bad. And you just don't know how the heck he came to that time. And, you know, you have to also realize a lot of kids, they scratch times. So at least he didn't scratch the time. I mean, he kept it, but it's kind of strange as to why he kept it. And it's even more strange is how he ran that time. So, yeah, on film and in person, we've seen him run by guys. And he certainly does look fast. And maybe there's that difference between track speed and football speed. But the football speed from a official time standpoint is low, and it does make you a little skeptical as to whether he is a true burner the way he's been labeled by people. Now, to answer the question about Cameron McDonald, how does he fit in with the receiver slash tight end position? He is a tweener. He sort of does kill two birds with one stone, but I think ultimately he is a tight end. We did a Future Impact piece detailing him and his evaluation and what we've seen from him as a receiver and how he would transition in college as a tight end. Read that piece. That goes into great detail about it. And I think they do not take another tight end in this class. I think there's no way you're going to take two tight ends in the class or take a tight end and then Cameron McDonald and kind of see what's going to happen to him. I think he impacts certainly the tight end position, but I think he also impacts the wide receiver position because I think from what I'm hearing now from a really good source, there's one more spot left. And I think because you're taking a tight end in this class, and that's Cameron McDonald, you're not going to be able to take three wide receivers.
Barrett Secutor had a bunch of wide receiver questions too. He's like, what's up? Gee, what's up with wide receiver recruiting? He used a lot of abbreviations too. Some of them are all lowercase, so it's a little confusing to read, but I'll go through it with you one by one and we can answer his questions. What did last week's commitments from McDonald and Hunt reveal? What does that mean?
It reveals that USC wants some speed in the receiving core. I think that, you know, they got bigger last year because they were able to bring in Joseph Lewis and they're bringing in Randall Grimes. And both those guys are good players and both those guys have good size. I think Randall Grimes is a player that really was underrated. I think he could end up being a pretty damn good player for USC. The thing that always stood out to me is his ability to run after the catch. And a guy that's 6'4", 6'5", you don't see a lot of that. And he's a guy that will not only catch the ball, but he's going to get some yards after he makes the catch as a big receiver. And Joseph Lewis certainly was the number one receiver in the country last year. And there was really nothing that I saw that you could make an argument that he was overrated. I know that, you know, in terms of, you know, he was injured and he didn't play all last season, but he's that guy that has it factor. And we've seen plenty of times where, you know, when either it was the offseason or it was for Hawkins, when somebody needed to make a play, Joseph Lewis was that guy to make a play. And he's a very natural receiver. He catches the ball effortlessly. And he's big and he's fast. So both those guys, they're really filling a lot of needs for USC because of losing Daquan Hampton. You're losing Isaac Whitney. You're losing Juju Smith. You're losing a lot of the size in the receiving corps. So last year was about getting a couple guys that you could bring in that will eventually be able to fill those physical roles that USC has. Now you're sort of looking, okay, we want to get the best of the best, but we also want to interject a little more speed. We don't have a guy that can really blow the top off the defense. And so Velus Jones is really the only guy I think I would say right now that has the legit speed to be a vertical threat to where in even a cover two situation, if that safety's falling asleep, Velus Jones is able to beat that safety and get over the top and be able to make a big play downfield. Other than that, you're really not looking at guys that are really super fast. Even Deontay Burnett, as good as he was last year, is a guy that you really have to get open by position and by design. You have to find ways to get him open, and then he's got great hands and he's going to make the catch. And he runs really fluid routes. And you know what? It goes to the point of speed isn't everything as a receiver. And you do want those dynamics. You do want that threat on the field because it makes the defense do a certain thing. But at the end of the day, Juju Smith wasn't super fast. Deontay Burnett's not super fast. Darius Rogers certainly wasn't super fast. And yet those guys were able to make a lot of plays for USC because they ran good routes and they were smart and they played within the system and they caught the football. It's such a simple thing to say, but I see people get so caught up in speed and size and this and that with the receiver position, but can the guy catch the friggin' ball? And that kind of goes to the point of, you know, our evaluation with Jalen Hall throughout the process and people sort of having a knee-jerk reaction and saying he's the number one receiver in the class because he's 6'5 and he's 180 pounds and he runs really well. This is all true, but he doesn't catch the ball real well. He's not a natural receiver. And we've seen enough of him at this point that we can say that confidently. And yeah, you can teach guys to catch the ball, but there's sort of a natural ability to just pluck that ball out of the air and bring it in and not to fight it. And some guys just have problems doing all those things. It's sort of a coordination issue a little bit. And with Jalen Hall, he definitely fights the ball and has had some issues with that. And so, you know, I think with USC, with Hunt, it was, hey, we can get a guy who's a bit of a playmaker that can get vertical. But the question obviously is that the right assessment? Is that legitimate? Can he really get deep and can he really be that guy? Or is it a guy that USC just took now just to put pressure on other guys? And we'll see what happens later. Cameron McDonald is the real deal. And we talk about natural receivers, and this is kind of what gets touched on in the future impact piece. He is a natural receiver. You got to see him. If you can get a chance to go to his huddle film, he actually has huddle film of the Sark camp when he was a sophomore to be a junior. And Long Beach Poly played in the 7-on-7 tournament. And so he was out there with Long Beach Poly, and you see him just making just these great catches, these backhand catches, and fluid in his routes, and very graceful as a runner. And if you can put 230, 240 pounds on that guy, he is going to be a legit tight end, you can put your hand in the ground because he's willing to block. He's not a great blocker right now, but it's high school, and then, you know, that is what it is. But he's actually a decent blocker for the situations that he's in when he has to block as a 6'5". He came in at 6'4.5". I think it was 210, 212, 14 pounds, something like that at the Nike camp. So, I mean, we're not talking about a guy that's 6'2.5", and you're hoping he's going to get 6'4". He's 6'4.5" right now.
Yeah.
So if you can put on the weight, he's a guy that could legitimately be a vertical threat as a tight end that could definitely change your offense. So he is a big get. He's a big time player. It's just a matter of bulking him up. And USC's talking about him being a hybrid. And to me, when you bring up hybrid, you bring up Rhett Ellison.
Oh, yeah.
Rhett Ellison is a guy that jumps in, you know, because that's the last time USC really used a tight end sort of as a hybrid H-back player, because Rhett Ellison was kind of sort of a fullback a little bit.
Yeah.
For USC.
They used him in that spot, too.
And so that's a guy that was 6'5", 240, 250 pounds.
You're saying it's hybrid where he can do both, not like just a receiver kind of thing.
Exactly. And okay. And so the one thing about Cam McDonald that he's going to have to improve on is just lowering his hips, becoming a little more agile, because when you're using those H-backs and those hybrids, like a guy like Rhett Ellison, you're using a lot of shallow routes. You're using a lot of play action, and those guys get open. Whereas I don't think that's necessarily Cam McDonald's strength. I think he's a little more traditional inline guy or split in the Y, where he gets vertical and he gets upfield. I think that's really where his strength is.
He can make big plays downfield, yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Barrett Secutor wanted to know if, like, a commitment from a guy like that, does it just put pressure on some of the other guys they're recruiting? And is USC now going to be out of it for guys, out-of-state five-star guys like Ezard and Eagles?
Well, with Marquez Ezard, I think they're out of it with him. He's going to be committing here, I think July 8th he announced, and he didn't make that visit to USC. He didn't camp at USC as scheduled, and I definitely got the vibe after he didn't show up and that fell through, that was going to be maybe the beginning of the end. I mean, USC is going to continue to go after him. They may continue to recruit him. The one thing that USC's been very good at is they've been relentless, and they haven't completely given up and thrown the white flag in for guys that they really like. And I think Ezra's a guy that they really like, and he certainly has sort of those Juju Smith attributes. But if he's committing now, it doesn't look good for USC. I think there's Florida State in there, there's Auburn, there's Georgia. He was also very close with Matt Corral.
Yeah.
And so when Matt Corral decommitted and he didn't show up for the camp, and connecting the dots, you kind of said, SC does not look like they're in the mix for this kid. But I mean, maybe he could shock the world, and you know, like you said, it's sort of one of those things where you get Andre Hunt to commit early, you know, there's one spot, and they put pressure on other guys, you know, maybe somewhere out of nowhere he ends up deciding he's going to commit to USC. I don't think so, but I haven't really followed up necessarily after he just tweeted, I think yesterday, that he was going to commit July 8th.
Wyatt wants to know, with, it's another, I guess it's kind of related to quarterbacks, but it's all intertwined. It's all related. How does Matt Corral's decommitment what does it mean for USC concerning Jalen Hall? Is he out of the picture?
He's not out of the picture. He'll never be out of the picture for USC as long as USC wants to continue to recruit him. It's just going to be a matter of, I think they want to see Jalen Hall's senior film. I think they want to see the first five games that Long Beach Poly plays next year. They want to see him play at Long Beach Poly. He's going to have a very good quarterback throwing to him. He's going to play against some better competition. All the things that you had question marks about him coming from Hawkins because of the level of competition are going to be erased with him early in the season playing Long Beach Poly. So I think that's really what you want to see from Jalen Hall.
All right. And then, crazy, we only have one question left. We got through all these, man. It's definitely different. We're sitting next to each other so we can talk and kind of look at each other. Whereas phone, it's a little harder. So I think this was a little more streamlined than maybe our phone ones were, even though we had more questions and more topics and more things to get into. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. Recruiting packed.
How long have we gone to this point?
This is an hour and a half.
Well, an hour and a half? Holy cow. Usually we try to get under an hour. So
yeah, but like we had one before. I mean, this is long, but I was thinking like 2 hours long was going to be the thing.
2 hours is a long time.
And who knows? We're not done yet. So let's see. You could go for 20 minutes on this last one. So this is on defensive backs. Chris from San Jose. I enjoy the weekly podcast. Keep up the great work. What is the quote unquote deal in regards to Elijah Griffin? Maybe I've overlooked his progress in recruitment, but I haven't seen his name mentioned in any spring and summer events. His reputation seems to state that he is quote unquote big time. I know Gerard has his interest as quote-unquote high in the target list. He uses a lot of quotes in his question. Where does he stand with USC, and what is his potential as an impact cornerback? Thanks, Chris from San Jose.
A lot of skepticism with Chris. You know, what's his deal?
A lot of quotes.
What's your deal, man? That's the Harbaugh, Pete Carroll thing. What's your deal?
Yeah.
Elijah Griffin's deal is that he actually was very good at two of the major events this past spring, earlier in the spring, both the Under Armour event and the opening in Los Angeles, where he got, I believe, MVP honors at both. I know he got invited to the opening finals. He'll be here because of his performance at the opening in Los Angeles. And he won the fastest man competition at the Under Armour All-America Camp, which is the ill speed competition, which kind of surprised me because I know Elijah Griffin's got good speed, but I didn't know he was faster than the likes of, well, he beat Chase Kota. He beat a couple guys there that are more track type guys. So that was interesting. But the thing about that particular event is it was head-to-head running. It wasn't just based on times. Originally, when they qualified, it was based on times. And it's not a 40-yard dash. It's not 100 meters. It's a sort of a gauntlet a little bit where they grab the football and then they turn a corner and then they run straight. So it's maybe a little more football speed than just a straight 40-yard dash, perhaps. I mean, that could be the argument. But Elijah Griffin ended up winning that. And so, yeah, early in the spring, you probably just weren't paying attention much to recruiting, but he kind of was the guy a little bit at corner, plays for Ground Zero, very good player for them. It's just been later in the spring he's been pretty quiet, mainly because I think the Ground Zero guys kind of pedaled back, and a lot of the tournaments they were in, the top guys weren't in those tournaments. Jack Lamb, a few of those guys that Ground Zero had didn't show up for those tournaments. And so Elijah Griffin was one of those guys that just later in the spring and over the summer has been quiet because he hasn't been going to a lot of events, but he kind of accomplished everything he needed to accomplish earlier in the spring.
Yeah.
And certainly smooth, a guy that has got good aggressiveness, good instincts. He plays some wide receiver for Mission Viejo as well, so he's got pretty good ball skills. He's got very good height. He's about 5'11", 6 foot, and again, a very smooth, fluid athlete and a guy that a lot of people are penciling in right now for USC. So that's the deal with him. He definitely does have high interest in USC, and if everything kind of works out, and again, you know, USC doesn't fall flat on their face. And he's one of those guys, though, that I think USC could probably win 8 games, and they could probably still have a pretty good shot at Elijah Griffin. Yeah. He's a local kid, and I think his dad is Warren G. You know Warren G, Ryan? The Regulators?
Yeah.
Snoop Dogg, Warren G? His dad's Warren G. And
I didn't realize that. That's
great. Yeah. And so I could see him wanting to stay local. And, you know, his dad comes out to all the events and everything, so he's very active in his son's career. And so I think he's kind of a West Coast guy, and it'd be one of those things that'd be kind of surprising if he did go away from the West Coast, and USC for sure right now is in the lead for him.
So he's another alpha menace guy. So one of those, a lot of
exactly.
Dudes
yeah. Team. They got we'll a lot get... of dudes on that team. And like I said, you know, Matt Corral was committed to USC when that team was put together. So that's really kind of sort of the USC team. We always see that every year. And I don't know if USC makes some calls or the kids just themselves want to play, you know, with each other because they, you know, obviously they're buddies and they're on their group chats and whatever, and they all want to kind of end up on the same team. But that's sort of the USC team this year.
All right. Well, we're in Beaverton, Oregon, covering the opening finals. We'll be out there a little bit later this afternoon.
Waiting for the sun to come out.
So this is rare. Okay, so we're in person. It's Saturday.
Yeah.
So we're doing a premium podcast on a Saturday. Don't do a lot of podcasts.
We're going to be so screwed up when we go back home. We're going to be like way off on our days and our weeks and stuff like that.
When you go back in so we go back on Monday. That's when the event ends. We'll be going back Monday night. And then the 4th of July is on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. So there's lots of crazy stuff going on. But hope you guys enjoyed. You had a lot of questions. I do apologize. We didn't get one up sooner, but I think we got to everybody. And if you sent it in, and I've got it, then I made sure I put it up. So, and Gerard, I think, did a great job answering them all. But make sure you check out USCFootball.com. We'll be up on the Parasol weekend with updates, photos, videos, interviews, all kinds of fun stuff.
Analysis. Yeah, definitely. There's already stuff on the Parasol about that. But today's actually tonight is going to be the first real opening event. Everything to this point has been Elite 11 stuff, which they stand around for most of the time, and then they throw a few passes here and there, And so the bulk of actual performance is going to start tonight, and then we'll get in the 7-on-7 tournament the next 2 days, and hopefully we'll get some good stuff for you guys.
All right. So hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, premium podcast for USCFootball.com subscribers. That's Gerard Martinez. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you enjoyed the show. Enjoy your 4th of July weekend, and we will talk to you next time.